There is no such thing as bad thoughts. Thoughts are neutral, they're like the tide. They go in and they go back out again. No such thing as a bad tide, and there's no such thing as a bad thought. In school, I was taught there was such a thing as bad thoughts. Shock and handy when you were going to confession and you could think of nothing better to say. Bless me, Father, I had shocking bad thoughts. Three Hail Marys and a glory be next penitent, please. But then I grew up and I was...
bigger.
And I realised that there was no such thing as bad thoughts. It all depends on what you do with them. If you would have the thought of getting up at your ex-girlfriend's up-and-coming wedding and telling the guest that you thought that she was a seriously sick psycho, horrendously unhinged, on fire, monumental lighting bitch. There'd be nothing wrong with that thought, per se. As long as you didn't harbour it. You'd be better off letting that thought go back out onto the high seas. Don't tie that thought to your pier. Don't rope that thought to your private pontoon. Don't drag it up the slipway to dry dock and scratch it, scrape it, scrub it, sand it, paint it, varnish it, and lovingly carve onto the side of its bow your ex-girlfriend's name, followed by the words, I loathe you. That'd be a crazy thing. In fact, if you saw that thought out of the corner of your eye, casually walking past your house, don't run out to the front door with your arms wide open. Come in, come in, come in. Pull up a chair, sit down, I'll put on the kettle, make a cup of tea. I'll make up the bed in the spare room. Better still, why not sleep in my bed? Crawl up my back, into my head, take up residence and have noisy parties all day and all night long. I have nothing better to be doing but to be entertaining you. That would be an insane thing to do. In fact, if you came down some morning and walked into your kitchen and saw that thought sitting down at your kitchen table, eating a bowl of your cornflakes, don't rush to the fridge to find strawberries and cream to put in the cornflakes. Don't feed that thought. You'd be better off telling that thought to get up off the chair and to go and fuck off. Or better still, quiz that thought. Ask him where he came from, who his parents were, who his relatives are, what he's doing there, and when he's going to go. Sooner or later, he would get pissed off with the whole Spanish Inquisition and he would get up and fuck off of his own volition. So, there's no such thing as bad thoughts, they're neutral, they're like the tide. Thank you.
Can we have a Grant March next?
I haven't been here for a couple of years now, and it's been great to be like this great vibe going on and being able to kind of feel that energy and everything. So it's great to be back.
2 years, Grant. That's too long.
Absolutely. Yeah. And unfortunately, my repertoire hasn't really expanded at all, really. You know. So some of you will have heard this before, but I hope you don't mind hearing it again if you have heard it before. Just before I say that, the films were on earlier, and there was this absolutely mighty film, I am from Knockmahinney, I think it was called. Mm. And it's definitely worthwhile coming in to check out some of the films. You know, you may not like all of them, but that poem blew me away. And just to mention that there's a new spoken word thing in Skibbereen called the Speakeasy Sessions, and it's for longer pieces. Longer pieces are can be done there, like maybe, I think they're talking about up to 15 minutes even, so that might be something to check out, but all different forms of spoken word. Anyway, there's one reference in my poem that refers to Bleeding Heart, which is a kind of a computer vulnerability where your passwords could get nicked or whatever. I hope you would agree that life is change, and it's we that choose that change. It all depends on us. the fabric of our society is under attack. The increasing demands of progress have made our hunger for information turn us into a fast food nation that rips the threads that bind us together, and one by one they snap. We're beginning to experience a new isolation. Care for our society is waning, our multicultural colors are fading, our unique identities are paling. Coca-Colaization has left a permanent stain on the dress of our civilization. Our communication is being bastardized by text message acronyms that rip the soul out of our languages, and consumers bragging about brands bully homemade creativity. Homogeneity is the new king, and he rules with an iron fist that hammers down any nail that sticks up. Today we live in a world where Google is the new religion that we blindly believe has all the answers. And the internet gradually kidnaps all our ideas, and it is only a matter of time before the ransom letters start coming through our letterboxes. And we shed private tears from a bleeding heart. Our deepest secret words pass through our fingers like grains of sand. There is no more privacy in this land. Letter writing is now something children marvel at behind the glass cases of museums. A new communication is limited to an artificial 140 characters as we witness the digital emasculation of our languages. Soon no one will have the balls to say what they mean, and we use goddamn smileys to show that we're keen. Mutilated messages devoid of personality litter our inboxes with misunderstandings. We fall out with friends and there are no soft landings. And we were all living towers of isolation, princesses whose only communication is done by tap, 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 tapping. We think we know who our friends are, but really we no longer recognize them, for the faces on Facebook are old, and our memories have all become cold. Permanently turned on by the vibrations in our pockets, we will find to our cost when the signal is lost that our contacts have become figments of our imagination, and that without that damn phone, we really are all alone. Yeah. Children learn to kill on 37-inch screens. They're all wearing headphones, so we can't hear the screens. And our living rooms have really become war zones in which our kids are fighting for their minds. The terms of our existence have become an increasing list of obscure legalese with conditions that we accept with incredible ease, and we sign away our lives with the digital tick of a pen, tick of a pen, tick of a pen. No one really knows all the contracts therein, and the small print lurks in the shadows. And we spend most of our days staring through windows that can unexpectedly shut down at any moment. The blue screen of death is the latest disease. How many times must this happen? We have to forget to rely on reset. It's only a machine, but when support is withdrawn, you'll know what I mean. And we think a television is for entertainment, but it's not that kind of box. It's the kind of box outside of which we cannot think. The revolution will be televised, and like hungry dogs, we will roam blood-soaked streets from the comfort of our armchairs, watching people die for their beliefs, while we, political eunuchs, watch our politicians play the game of ping-pong blame. Malevolent apathy is our biggest killer, our minds blank canvas, forever vanilla. We're politically dead, and the only resurrection is a bullet to the head. Life is change, and we choose that change. It all depends on us. Let's choose wisely.
Can we have door next, please?
This is not autobiographical, is it? Kind of pronounced it. Mm-hmm. Oh, Sarkin the Moon. Why has the Milky Way disappeared, and why has that paisley scarf been blown past the planets into nowhere? Now the sky is black, just like I feared, not a single star to be seen. That bunch all know I am down there all alone, gazing, knowing I've lost track, making all these threats about sorting the moon. But the moon will sort me, I'm sure of that, and of my many pets. Thanks.
Sandra Besme next.
I wanted to read, this is something new, this is something I've worked on while here in Cork, and there's a, the epigraph says, after Roland Barthes, it's fine if he's not familiar, but he's a kind of eccentric French philosopher and studier of photography. He published a wonderful short book called Camera Lucida, which was on photography, but also an elegy for his mother, and he was struck by a laundry truck. Only about 2 months after it came out, he died thinking it was a failure. The early reviews had not been good, and in fact, it was one of the greatest kind of lyric nonfiction books we have on photography. So his book replicates any number of images, but there's one image that he chooses not to include. This poem is called Winter Garden Photograph, after Roland Barthes. Barthes withholds this image from Camera Lucida. Henriette, the five-year-old who grows up to be his mother, her hands on her hips. He couldn't bear that our gaze might find her ordinary. As one might find this snapshot of my grandparents arriving in Rapid City, North Dakota. Her precise handwriting on the back declares their America the Beautiful tour. Jeans, jaunty scarf, Carl in his crisp white shirt, 1990. In 1991, I pick up the calendar she kept by her reading chair. Her neat script filled the square of January 22nd. Carl died. Life is over. The woman in green jacket and green skirt, full throttle, smiles toward the camera as she rounds the corner of the terminal, purse under one arm, blue carry-on under the other. Because this photograph is not mine to keep, I take a photograph of it. Barthes would say I am now operator and referent, sliver of thumb and palm visibly cradling the Kodak print. The rest of January would stay blank, February blank, March bare. But then a church meeting was scheduled. She penciled in a lunch. Yes, she would come to the rehearsal. Her cursive wakened the days. Even in winter, the garden calls itself to bloom again.
Beautiful, Sandra. Thank you. Can you see blue?
I seem to have a theme today. I don't know if I've done this piece before. It's written in July 2018. I was not a five-word poem, so I might have done it. Okay, so how this happened is I was watching a little boy. We have this skate park in Carrigaline, right? So it's like everybody, teens, youngsters. And there was this little boy, and I think he was either on a scooter or on a little bike or something. And he had fetal alcohol syndrome. I don't know if you guys know what that looks like, but basically looks like a person whose face has been stuck in an embryonic state because the alcohol that the mother was drinking was affecting the development of the embryo. So I was thinking about this boy a lot when I saw him, and I was thinking about the mother, and I was thinking what she must be thinking. So I wrote this. I don't know if it could represent anything the mother would be thinking, but I wrote it anyway. So this is called FAS, for fetal alcohol syndrome. I wake to another morning. My boy is downstairs playing. He's happy. I can hear him laugh in the playroom. He has many toys, but not many friends. What have I done? Every day I have to face my guilt when I look into his face. His short eyes, almonds with double lids stretched, his nose flatter, too small, like stuck in an embryonic state. His chin receding from tiny mouth, no groove above the upper lip. He smiles, his eyes happy, as I open the door to his room. Gets on his feet, arms stretched out, running up to me, wrapping himself around my legs. Mama, I love you so. Good morning, my boy, I say, as I hug him dearly and look into his face. What have I done? Fetal alcohol syndrome. Because I kept on drinking when he was growing inside. Because I did not stop for him. And now every day I have to face his troubles, face the judgment of society and my guilt in that small face of his, which I so love. What have I done?
Nelly Azabardi.
Nice, I mean that's zero waste poetry. Mother's Day, and you don't care. And you wonder why I care that you don't care. Don't be upset, you say. I want to have a good day with you today. Through the phone, I can hear your heart pounding in your voice, aware that you raised in me some kind of emotion you can't fully understand. Are you ask, what, upset? And I am, and I want to be the child here for a minute. I want to stomp my feet and scream your name until we both feel red in the face. Your indifference to something as stupid as a made-up holiday, where you should love me because someone has said so, reminds me of all those days where nobody loved me, despite of someone saying they should. I'm not upset, I lie. I love you.
Anita stares at what is inside the jar, a little star dancing in the darkness, lighting her face. It is so bright, yet so small, that she cannot make of its true shape. This jar and this golden speckle are her treasure and secret. Every time she looks into it, she remembers the stories that her father told her and her brothers about all of them. He's a shepherd of sorts, taking them from a place to another. Sometimes one can get lost and he must go find it. When he comes home, he brings back the tales and feeds their dream of ever going on the chase after those elusive twinkling sheep. Anita stares, and the sparkle talks. There's more than she could ever have hoped for. The story is the same as some her father would tell, but more vivid, almost real. The child realized that spark is a life that has not ended yet, full of regrets, joy, sadness. It will continue to live, because she will open the jar, take that life into her own hands, that glow into her heart. At dawn, the child is found peacefully sleeping next to an open, cleaned mustard jar. The star is gone. As she draws breath in her slumber, her mother observes perplexedly a single strand of blonde hair embedded in the little, pretty, dark, childish maid. Worried, rightfully, that she would not wake up.
Patricia Walsh next.
Thank you. This is called Even the Devil Has to Obey God. The royal phone call has its own statistics. Texting over text, a heartfelt effort. Immeasurable contact over hearty songs. Permitted into wonder at who the assailee is. Infinite expensive one forever is. Disposable subjects phone in submission. Discomfortable design, hardly esteeming, putting personal effort in the last few cents. Probably sick or stupid, going on a tangent. Rewarded by eventual contact, be that as it may. If only to shut up and go away. Silencing a diatribe beyond all doubt. Reaching out to fashion distance, taking no hints. An eventual callback to the best of scorn. Picking through blunders on a glorified scale. Giving numbers at your pedal. A sale forevermore. Sometimes politely calling it hold to this. Typical underdoing other personal details to quiet. Breeding indolence, reaching to better contacts. Polishing details not given in any circumstances. A dog under stress is not given nightly. Sick in literature nestling in your best pocket. The again feared call. Hard text at home holy hours. Ignored in person. Greeting is no longer a bite. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that, Patricia. Give Charles Clark next.
Iris Murdoch and others. Iris Murdoch, the celebrated novelist, philosopher, lecturer, and as she said herself, I'm Irish. That's something. Come, ma'am, she replied. Come, ma'am, she replied to my protestations. We both loved Ireland. And after dinner, she spoke. Tragedy is a very long pause. And comedy is famously. One got the idea. Hold. This is the very room, the source, the provenance of Donald McNabb's sherry glass. If you don't mind drinking from a dead man's glass, he addressed his tutorial student. His cousin added and subtracted MacLeod of MacLeod, his wife's surname, hence MacLeod, MacNab, MacNab, before the old lady, Dame Flora, lived to 100 and received many protestations of loyalty from clansmen from Canada and Hong Kong, the the world of Scottish exiles at Dunbeggan Castle on the Isle of Skye.
Thanks very much for sharing that with us, Charles. Can we have Sam next, please?
Well, hello. My mother was brought up in Hamilton, and her entire side of the family sounded like rap. And I was father was English, and because my mother was told by her grandmother who brought her up essentially to marry an Englishman, I learned to talk like an English woman. So my mother talked like this, and I was brought up British. And you might like this poem because, you know, your time in Germany. I had a problem with my landlord, a particular landlord at the time that I wrote this. I can't quite remember when I wrote it, but it went down well in Australia. There was a Britisher, anal retentive, and if she were a bit more inventive, she'd let out her cheeks and give a big screech for the passions of her incentives. She held it all in and was restless, found pregnant and found she was nestless. The community around seemed to care less, too worried about where the money coming from, either feeding the baby or building the bomb. Cause they'd be kicked off their land too. The land that now sees just a few. Them damn Britisher landlords with their turnips for work and burning out homes all over the world and in their own backyards. My people too, and stuck like glue, mired and marred and left with the scars. Them damn Britisher landlords with their polite society and all of its gaiety feverishly, furiously melting away. Back up their asses from whence came the pollution that fills up the sky, their wealth and our health. Our families are left with no homes, people are left all alone. Isolated, inebriated, sedated, all separated. All I want for me is a place to be free, with people I love who are happy. I want a free land and I want a free sky. I want to be free when I live and free when I die. So all you Britisher, anal retentive, I have no greater incentive than to let out your cheeks and pull out the bleach and hear a big screech. Ow. From the landlord who'll be so repentant.
Get me to the bar, that was really amazing. Get me to the bar, I'm not an alcoholic. Get me to the bar, British at anal retentive. The bar of the law.
Thanks very much. That was an adventure to listen to. Can I have Kira next, please?
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Well, that's a pretty hard act to follow. Sorry to bring the mood down a little bit. So this is a poem that I wrote a couple of years ago. I live in Seattle, and I was home in Cork looking after my elderly aunt, who had Alzheimer's. And she was troubled. And I was trying to figure out a way to let her go, you know, let her forgive herself and just let go. So she loved wishing wells. So this is called the Wishing Well. Wisha, wisha, wisha. Is Misha, Misha, Misha. Reflection mirrored. Ripple effect. Coin drop. Deep in the well. The wishing thoughts fell. Lightening the load of thoughts that abode. The wishing well wishes the wish. Calm is restored. Reflection is met. Thank you.
Emotional and simple. Thank you. And deep as well. Kevin Elaine next, please.
Thank you. my very first poem.
Oh,
and I am afraid of feedback. And I hope you have the understanding. But it came from very deep within. It didn't come all at once in 15 minutes. It came gradually. So I wrote little bits here and there, and I just went and wrote like that, and it goes, yes, that's it. And then nothing else came. And then it continually came. But it's very slow. I don't even know if it's fully finished. I'm not sure of the title. It could be Within, or it could be Momentous. But it is quite deep.
Well, we'll be the judge.
This is so
nervous.
Shoot that person.
Pondering this fact, it will not retract into the core of the mind. Something sublime alerts us to the wonderment in quiet content. Internal joy not yet expressed but anticipated. Euphoric roar brought to the fore. No longer in isolation, ecstatically received. Contagiously unified. Elation perceived, allowing us to breathe the essence of happiness. Reactively supplying a positive vibe, so carefully described. Yet, interpretation so unique to accept or criticize. Ours to define, requiring the release from the pressurized beast too frequently feasts on the minutia of the mind.
Find a little bar hole to jump down and you keep writing. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Let it flow.
Can we ask Stanley Nash next, please?
Oh, cool.
This is a very short poem that's happening by me. I think short poems are really difficult to write, and they're really good ones. And then Paul handed me a book last week. You can tell you, Marley, and I know when I was flipping through and I came across this one. It's called Hope. Hope. Last night, we made love for the first time since you lost the baby. Aww.
So this is a five-word challenge from the last time defenestrated was one of the ones, which is about 2 months ago.
Just to make.
And I have another one in here from the time before that when defenestrated was a word, which was a couple of months before that. I'm only saying, like, I'm not trying to make a point on that. The other words were stone, moist, alchemical, and toxic. I defenestrated a bee today, although I did smash the window before it exited. I used a curling stone that my father had inherited. My husband was unconvinced by my contention that the life of a bee was equal to the cost of a replacement pane of glass. I told him that I felt I had no other option. What was the broken hasp that he'd promised to mend months ago? He looked up from his phone to inform me that the going rate for a swarm of bees was €200, and that with an average of 20,000 individuals in a swarm, the cost of one bee was negligible, unlike the AAA-rated triple-glazed unit that I destroyed. My eyes moistened, my heart rate increased, and my pupils dilated. The alchemical changes continued. I grew to over 6 feet tall, and my biceps and bosom swelled. In Churchillian terms, I berated him for his tabloid understanding of economics, of how there could be no equivalence between the life of a bee and a double, triple glazing unit. Finally, he agreed. I paid for the window. He started a beekeeping course.
That was great. great rap, very educational. I didn't mean to sound like
that. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Shuri Goo next, please.
Thanks, Philip. This is fresh off the press, so bear with me. It's part of work. I'm doing a course tomorrow for the day. It's called Love, and it's just the signing communication language for people who are non-verbal autistic. So it's called Love. It's in Irish. It's really short. I've translated it in English. Love. Fuam Fuckle foot. Mangach hoot. Our sir the aig. Bail gan frihara. Amol gan adiachti. Tanga gan teax. Thurdom the lava. Meren the mahuconacha. Fravica folklorica. Tussidum of una. Krohna aleiv. Symbolica sahloga. Sminti right. The ho a eshend. Hand. Noise from me. Words about you, a smile your way, doubt across your face, a verbless mouth, a breath without adjectives, a tongue without text. Give me your hands, emotional fingers, vocabulary roots, you my teacher, to read your shapes, slug your symbolism, share your thoughts, see your voice.